This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Scott Talbot is the new Guides and Outfitters liaison at Safari Club International, SCI. And he's got some big shoes to fill, essentially. It's a role that has been vacant at SCI for a couple of years. And as you'll hear, Scott has just embraced the role completely. I wanted to have this conversation with Scott from a number of reasons. Number one, there's a little perception around SCI and Guides and Outfitters that Scott is now rectifying. Two, I wanted to talk about convention, SCI, Nashville, what's coming, why you should be there. And two, just have a general conversation with Scott about who he is. As you will find, he's got a storied background, storied history when it comes to wildlife conservation here in the United States specifically. And as you'll find out, is just an incredibly personable individual that is really changing the personality, in my opinion, around SCI and their engagement of exhibitors, outfitters, guides all around the world.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name is.
Does my hair look okay?
It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
Perfect. No, so what I was saying about this DNA helix is, you know, it's the shape of the O, it's the two O's.
Mm-hmm.
So the blood is shaped in a bullet. If you don't see it,
I just see that now.
So which is good, and that's good that you actually said that, because I see it obviously, like very very prominently. But if someone just glanced at it, I don't think they would automatically assume it's in the shape of a bullet.
No, absolutely not.
I'm good right now. Do you want a drink?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Do you want some water?
No, thanks.
And so in the middle, to make the two O's is the helix, is a DNA helix. And the much bigger logo has a family tree coming out of the helix. So this family tree, and it's supposed to represent, you know, your grandfather to your father to you to your kids. But what it's turning into is like a blood origins family. So when we talk to someone, like we talk to you, after we finish talking, you're going to say, hey, Robbie, you should actually talk to this guy. And so you're actually going to form your own tree.
There you go.
In blood origins.
I like it. I like the helix that's solid rather than the spot.
Yeah, the spot in the center. And I may actually look at seeing if we can fold a helix like this. That'd be pretty cool. Maybe a new next design for the for the Blood Origins t-shirt and swag and stuff. I actually quite like that. That's a great idea.
I like that.
Instead of the dot. So the dot's supposed to represent like the blood vessel. Like that's where that's being carried. It's in the middle. It's in the center of the... But the helix is better. I like that.
I think we missed the mark on the blood vessel.
I know. Or the center of the helix, the origins of the helix. Sure.
Absolutely. Ooh, I like the helix. And so looking at this, I didn't see the helix.
Mm. A little bit more of a twist.
Mm-hmm.
I think
absolutely.
But this looks more twisty, right?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Looks much better.
First time in Zimbabwe? First time in Africa?
First time in Africa. I'm a boy who grew up in Wyoming and... was fortunate enough to travel all over the U.S. With my career in wildlife. And when that was over, I decided that it was time for me to see some other things and do some other things. And here I am in Africa. So it's the first time I've been on the road for almost exactly 2 months today. Started off in Namibia.
Yep. Say it properly. Namibia. There we go.
Namibia.
That's it.
And Windhoek.
Windhoek, good, correct.
And
have you had a Windhoek lager?
I had some Windhoek lager.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The running joke on this trip is that you are allergic to beer and meat.
Running joke. I like my vegetables processed by an ungulate.
You're a vegetarian through a cow.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, on this trip, I think that maybe a cow has dropped quite some down the list.
Yeah.
Unbelievable food in Africa. I am an instant Baai fan.
Instant poiki fan?
The poiki is great, but I have to tell you that I stayed at some places and ate some Baai with some people, mm-hmm. and it was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely fabulous. Started off with zebra and
yep.
springbuck,
yep.
and I've had some unbelievable...
Who was that with?
That was with Hannes de Plies in Namibia.
In Namibia.
Yep. I can't talk as fast as you can. You guys drive on the wrong side of the road, you eat with the wrong...
What are you talking about me, you? I'm American, man.
There you go.
Actually, it's funny... Like, the South Africans haven't said anything, but as soon as I came to Zim, a couple of the Zim guys have said to me, like, what kind of accent is that? I was like, South African. They're like, no, you've got something else in there. I said, well, it's 20 years of Mississippi mixed in with the South African accent.
The
Americans still think I'm South African, so that's exactly what I'm looking for.
So from a boy from the West, you sound much more like South African than you do Southern U.S.
There we go. That's what I
want.
And
that's a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
But
so anyway, you were the director of Wyoming Game and Fish.
I was. For 8 years under Governor Matt Mead, we worked on a whole gamut of issues, everything from sage-grouse conservation, big game migration corridors, probably the issues that were the most contentious, obviously, were the delisting of the wolf population
mm-hmm.
that came out of Yellowstone National Park.
And still stands today.
No, actually, the wolf issue in Wyoming has quieted quite a bit.
No, I mean the delisting has. The delisting has stood.
Yes,
correct.
This time it has stood. It was overturned a couple of times, but it has stood, and it appears that management's actually working quite well in Wyoming. Mm. And I know that Montana and Idaho are not nearly as happy with it as I am personally. But wolf management in Wyoming seems to have, you know, we fought for a long, hard battle. We fought for 20 years nearly to get dual classification of wolves in Wyoming.
What is dual classification of wolves?
So in the northwest corner of Wyoming, Yellowstone, and many of those large adjacent wilderness areas, wolves are classified as a game animal.
And still today?
Still today.
Okay.
And outside of those areas, when wolves get into areas that are densely populated with cattle and sheep, and where those conflicts, for example, the Bighorn Mountains. Bighorn Mountains is home to hundreds of thousands of domestic sheep. Wolves and domestic sheep just are not compatible land
mm-hmm.
uses.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fought very hard to have some of those areas in the state whereby wolves could be taken without significant oversight.
It must be somebody really important staying at this hotel.
I see that.
Yeah, we've got AK-47s and policemen not sleeping, so that's impressive.
No, they are not sleeping. They weren't sleeping last night. I see lots of suits, and I see lots of military garb, too. Mm-hmm. So,
and yeah. So where are we? Let's give people actually, since we're already 6 months in, 6 minutes into the podcast, I haven't even introduced you. Scott Talbot, please. Welcome to the Blood Origins podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Introduce yourself, who you are, what you've done, what you do right now.
I am Scott Talbot. I originally grew up in Wyoming. My family has a small cattle, horse, sheep ranch. We haven't had sheep for a long time, but it was a great upbringing. My father was the person who taught me about wildlife conservation, had an unbelievable conservation ethic for a person of his background and education, taught us as children to appreciate all wildlife, not just the big charismatic critters that ran the earth, but all of the little things. And after I graduated from high school, I went to college, and my goal in life was to become a game warden.
Hmm.
And so I set about becoming a Wyoming game warden, and I went to work for the Wyoming Game and Fish Department at the ripe old age of 23, and it was an unbelievable adventure.
And 35 years later, retired as the director of the Game and Fish Agency.
Under Governor Matt Mead, and Governor Mead left office, and I retired. And
well, it's a political position, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The governor.
How many people in the Wyoming Game and Fish have gone, started at the lowest level of a game warden and ascended to director?
I think two others beside
me. Wow, that's pretty cool.
It is. It is. Mr. Terry Cleveland did it, and Mr. Pete Petra did it. And those are the only two guys that I'm aware of that did that.
It's pretty cool that they have that lineage.
It is. It is. It develops a really strong camaraderie within the agency.
Well, they don't feel like the director doesn't know the job or hasn't been there, done that.
And so, Rob, I had a really interesting career. And that I started off as a game warden, and I'm in Africa now, so obviously I have some spirit of adventure deep inside of my soul. But I spent a lot of time traveling around the state, many, many different positions. I was a damage control warden working with landowners to mitigate damage to private property by game animals and trophy game animals, anything from livestock killed by mountain lions and bears to elk and haystacks and deer and alfalfa seeds and seed crops. And then I went to...
That's why you were such a good shot in the shooting matches, man. Damn.
Well,
when I heard you were an animal damage control officer, I was like, oh, here we go. He's going to win the whole bloody thing, man.
But anyway, I went from there to being a game warden, and I very, very much enjoyed that. But after 5 years of that, I was very interested in law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement. So I joined our investigative unit. And that is a plainclothes unit that investigates wildlife crime. And that was an absolute kick. I loved it. And one day my supervisor came in and said, I think you should put in for the Green River supervisor job. And I was shocked. I think I was a ripe old 32 years old at the time with about 9 years experience with game and fish. Next thing I know, I was a supervisor in the southwest corner of Wyoming, in charge of all of the terrestrial wildlife management. And I had a crew of about 8 guys, biologists and game wardens, that were working with me. And we started moving forward in Green River. And for personal reasons, 2 years later, to get closer to my children, I moved back to Casper. And then I was the Casper supervisor.
My University of Wyoming's in Casper?
No, University of Wyoming's in Laramie.
That's right.
Yep. But went back to Casper And my career then broke into 8-year segments. Mm. I was the Casper supervisor for about 8 years. And that's the northeast corner of the state rather than the southwest corner of the state. Very different. Southwest corner of the state's mostly public land, and the northeast corner's almost exclusively private land. Did that, and then I stepped up to the assistant division chief of wildlife, and that was a very interesting position. Lots of responsibilities at that time. That position promulgated and drafted all of the big game hunting regulations, was in charge of the damage program, which was the oversight of payment to damage claims to landowners. Mm-hmm. It had oversight of the access program, about 1 million to 1.5 million acres of private land that we had access working with landowners. Charge of the investigative unit and oversight of law enforcement.
Jeez.
And then
anything else? Like, is there anything else to do?
Well, we have the
How many more things did you put in your plate?
We have the trophy game section, and then I got to do all the oversight and management of grizzly bears and wolves.
Jeez.
I got to put together a wolf management program for the state of Wyoming.
The first one ever?
The first one ever, and the second one ever.
Jeez.
We put together the first program and hired the people, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service relisted wolves, and a year later, I tore apart the program that it took me a year to build.
Mm.
So,
jeez.
No, it was a crazy time. But, yeah, there was a little responsibility that went with that position. Mm.
Then you were the director for 8 years.
And then when Governor Mead got elected, he asked me to serve as director. And so I went from, I was actually technically the chief of wildlife because the chief was out on medical, with medical issues, which did not resolve in his favor. And I was the chief of wildlife for, I think, about 4 months and in an acting capacity. And while I was in that position, Governor-elect Mead asked me to be director of Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And for the next 8 years, it was all out. It was a great ride.
Yeah, I'm sure
it was.
It was
an unbelievable ride. And I look back at the whole, you know, we dealt with issues, very contentious issues, and I was one of those guys that had the privilege of dealing with extensive budget cuts and all of the financial issues that agencies go through. But we actually came out of that a much stronger, much leaner, much more effective agency than we started. And that was a very difficult exercise, but I have to tell you, it was an exercise that was very worth it in the end and reflected very positive on the people that were in the agency and the agency. So I have to do a little bit of bragging here. After we got back on track, we had to cut the budget by about $12 million to make it about 5 months, which we did. I engaged all of the personnel to see what they thought we could cut and how their jobs could be more efficient. And when I started as director in 2011, quite frankly, our reputation was not the greatest. There was a lot of contention in Wyoming toward game and fish. But
did you know that already before you took the job?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And
it wasn't new to you.
It was not new to me, and it was not a surprise, and that was one of the reasons that Governor Mead called upon me. And so toward the end of my time, my tenure as director, we were going to do a strategic plan, a plan into the future, and part of that was we surveyed the public. We did an extensive public outreach. We had online, we had focus groups, we had scientifically valid surveys that were done. And when we got done with all of that information, the two marks that I will remember forever is that we had a 92% public approval rate and we had a 97% public credibility rate.
Jeez.
And
this was at the end of your tenure.
That was about 8 months before the end.
Oh, man, amazing.
And That was done by responsive management.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark Duda probably was involved in that.
Mark Duda did that work. Mark Duda. And that was the highest scores Mark Duda has ever seen in any public or private agency. And I credit the people of the Wyoming Game and Fish Department that were working with me at that time.
Amazing.
They stepped up and they went to work and they did a phenomenal job.
Amazing. Yep. I don't know if you know this or not, but we did a project. I think it was like the second project I ever undertook with under Blood Origins was in Wyoming.
I didn't know that.
And it was with the Wyoming Wildlife Federation.
Oh, really?
And we funded the Hunters for the Hungry program.
Very good.
We raised like, I think, $32,000 or something crazy.
I used to work with them very closely.
Yeah.
Lots of legislative work in Wyoming, yep. And I got to meet a lot of people.
You know Jess Johnson?
Of course I do.
Yeah, Jess Johnson's a good mate.
Yep.
So you decided 4 years, you're like, I just need to go and hunt and fish. And
I did. I had a great time. And, you know, when you're a director of a wildlife agency in the United States, you
get meet some good people, contacts.
You get some good contacts. That's well said. And so
it's all about who you know in this world.
Well, when you're a director, you know a lot of people. You don't have any choice. And so actually it was just a little less than 5 years, 4.5 years. I went all over the country, and I did everything from hunt big game animals and birds and fished, and I actually even ended up out on the coast of Oregon digging razor clams, things that most Wyoming boys don't end up
doing. Oh, man, amazing.
No, it was. It was absolutely amazing, and I had a friend of mine that I worked with and when we were working in bear conflict 20 years into my career, and I was visiting her with her one morning, and I said, what are you doing today? And she says, well, I'm flying to the Yukon to advise on a grizzly bear project.
From Wyoming?
No, she was actually at the time from Louisiana.
Oh, where was she at the time when you called her?
Oh, no, she was in the airport, okay. Headed to the Yukon to consult on this project. And I said, you have my job. And she said, no, I don't. She said, but I know the job that you should have. I was like, really? Tell me about this. She said, well, if you're going to go back to work, you need to call Safari Club. They got a guide and outfitter liaison position that's open right now. And she said, that would be the perfect
job. Who was that woman
for
that you talked to?
That's a friend of mine by the name of Maria Davidson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Had she already taken the job of SCI?
Oh, yeah. She's already working with SCI. Yep. And so I've known her for, I hate to say this, but almost 30 years now. And
she lives in Wyoming now, right?
She does.
Yeah, yeah.
She does. And so anyway, she said, no, I get the
Were you interested in getting back into work?
You know, I had a lot of job offers, Rob, when I retired, I got contacted by a lot of conservation organizations, said, hey, we want you to come on board. And I needed a break. And I told myself that I might do something, but I didn't want to get right back into the middle of that aspect of conservation work. And when this position came open, I looked at it and I said, hey, this will get me back in and meet people. I'll get to go see things and make a difference that way.
So you are the guides and outfitters liaison for Safari Club International.
I am.
Who did the job before you?
Gentleman by the name of John Baretsky, and unfortunately John Baretsky had some health issues and passed a number of years ago.
So how long has the position been unfilled?
I'm not sure. I've been in the position about 10 months right now, and I think that it was unfilled for perhaps 18 months to 2 years prior to that, and I think that John was sick for a while and probably during those times was probably not as effective as he was when he was not sick, but very, very well-respected man. And I hear lots and lots about him, and everybody tells me that I have big shoes to fill, but I don't have big feet, but I got long legs.
That's right. But you didn't, you know, I've asked this question before, so I'll ask it over the podcast since people can hear it. What's your mandate? Like, what is the thing that you have to do?
Everything with guides and outfitters. And so to put that in perspective, there is a lot of issues that affect guiding and outfitting. And let's remember that the the motto for SCI is first for hunters. And so we do everything we can to help hunters. And a huge part of that is outfitters. And there's permitting issues. There's a number of federal issues that come down from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on decisions that they make. There's legislative issues that come up. So my job is to liaise between those guides and outfitters, the issues that they're doing, and Ben and advocacy. Mm-hmm. We talk constantly about how these issues affect guide and outfitters, and guides and outfitters bring issues to me that I bring to Ben and say, we need to do something about this. And, mm-hmm. and then another huge portion of that, and you, I think we touched on it earlier, if not just before the podcast, is convention. Mm-hmm. And so convention is very important to guides and outfitters to help them in their business, but it's important to hunters. And SCI is in the middle of that, and we need to make sure that we bring outfitters in for hunters, and we need to bring hunters in and connect those services so that that it's mutually beneficial to all.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, but I will.
Because, well, thank you.
Because this is, you know, Blood Origins is Blood Origins. We have very authentic, truthful conversations. SCI on the street, word on the street, doesn't really care about their exhibitors, their outfitters, whatnots. That's the word on the street. That's not Robbie Kroger saying it. That's the word on the street.
And the question is?
And the question is that, you know, what do you think about that? Or what do you feel about that?
I hate that. And you and I just had a discussion about public support of Wyoming Game and Fish Department and how we turned that around. And that bothers me. Mm-hmm. It bothers me immensely. And that's not the reputation. That's not the attitude. That's not the approach that I want outfitters to have towards Safari Club International. And as you know, I have been on the road for an extensive amount of time right now, meeting mm-hmm. not only with associations, mm-hmm. but individual outfitters and talking to them about their issues. And you're right. I'm well aware that mm-hmm. that there's some concern about dealing with SCI when it comes to the convention. And I got some ideas, and we need to move forward to resolve those to the best of our ability.
Well, I will say this, you know, and I told you this. I texted folks that I know at SCI. I texted Cassidy, and I said, and I've been in these circles not a long time, 5 years or so, but the personable nature of you, of Scott Talbot, engaging in these arenas now, I think is a game changer.
I appreciate that. I hope it's a game changer, and if it's not, I'll work harder at it. I'm dedicated to it. I believe in it, and it's something that I'm fairly passionate about, and I think that I don't see there is a reason or a valid excuse for not having positive relationships, and I believe in that. And I think I got a proven track record of it when I come from Wyoming, and I'm going to do everything in my ability to bring that to SCI.
Yeah, you guys can hear a little bit of wind, but we're sitting on the lawns on the Zambezi River, probably half a mile away from the Vic Falls.
It's a beautiful place.
Tough location to do a podcast.
It's a great place to share with you, my friend.
Yeah. People that are listening to this podcast may not know about convention, may not know about where it's at, the whole kit and caboodle around it. Tell people more about it.
Convention has been touted by, I believe, Reuters Magazine as the greatest sports show.
I don't know whose mic that is. That may be my mic.
So. In the world, I think they quoted it as the Super Bowl of sporting shows. And so it's in Nashville, Tennessee this year, January 31st through February 4th. It is an unbelievable opportunity for hunters and outfitters to get together, to plan hunts, to plan activities, to get to know each other. It's not only is it a great business opportunity for those folks, but it is a great social opportunity. You've been there. There's entertainment. There's lots to do. It is absolutely a great time. And even if you're not looking to book a hunt or go on a hunt, if you want to meet the people in the outdoor industry, and whether that be firearms or ammunition or optics or shoes, boots, whatever, SCI is an excellent, excellent place to go to see all those vendors under one roof at one time.
Yeah.
And there's great nightly entertainment. And I would really encourage people to go. So I went to SCI convention maybe 8 years in a row as director, talking mostly about wildlife disease issues and what was going on with chronic wasting disease and issues in the West, endangered species. So I guess I would say that for a while I was a longtime SCI attendee.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a great show. It's a great show.
Well, it's an even better show now that it's in Nashville.
It is. It's a great show. Last year was awesome.
I think I was probably the thousandth hand that you had shook at the convention on the floor. Somebody grabbed me and says, "You need to come meet Scott." I was like, "Who's Scott?" He's the guy out for this liaison. I was like, "All right." And here comes this big dude coming down. "Please meet you. I've got to go talk to this guy."
I shook a lot of hands. I collected a lot of business cards, and I made a lot of friends. It was a great convention, and I guess I'm following up on a lot of those contacts.
That's awesome.
Right.
That's
now,
awesome. As you said, you've been on the road for 2 months.
I have.
And you're going to leave here, head to Alaska.
I'm going to leave here. I'll be home for a very short period of time, 2 days.
Just enough time to kill a cow elk.
I got to get some bull tongue, my friend.
Yeah.
I'm a converted man. Kill a cow elk, and then I have to go to Alaska to their professional hunters meeting there, and then I will go directly to Idaho to the Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association meeting.
Okay.
I'm going to spend some time with my family over Christmas and then back on the road in January to Montana Guides and Outfitters Association and then convention.
Sweet.
So between now and about the 7th of February, thank goodness Christmas is in there. I missed, you know, and you and I have talked, but in Wyoming you have to be 14 years of age to hunt big game animals.
Mm.
And 2 years ago, my brother and his son, my nephew, drew the Oryx licenses at White Sands Missile Bases in New Mexico.
Lucky buggers. I've been putting in for 6 years, 7 years now.
They put in 1 year.
No way.
Drew two licenses.
Oh, my God.
The odds of that are in the tens of thousands. But they drew, and they asked me to go down there and hunt oryx with them. So I went down and hunted oryx. And
did they kill two?
Oh, yeah. We killed two nice bulls.
Nice.
And I came back, and I didn't have an elk license. And I kind of sat on the sidelines that 1 year. And I think that was the first year in almost 30 years that I didn't kill an elk.
Jeez.
And then last year, of course, I was in the woods and was very successful. And this year, I got 2 days.
2 days.
And I knew I was going to be gone, so I didn't apply for a bull license. I applied for a late
cow license. I'm sure you'll
be
fine. I'm sure you'll be fine.
I'll go out and enjoy myself.
I'm sure you have a little bit of experience in the woods around where you live.
I might have a little bit of insight where there might be a cow.
I think I got like 9. I think I got 9 Wyoming elk points right now.
Do you really?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
I know. I got another contact there. It's going to put me on a big bull.
Well, I have some great places to go elk hunt.
Sweet.
You get a license and we'll share a fire and some bull tongue.
Awesome.
How's that?
That sounds amazing. Scott, thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. I appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.